This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. Wednesday is going to be Leah Hextall Day. We had such fun last week, got a great reaction, so I'm a guy that just likes to give the public what they want. And I know you're very busy, but, you know, if you can come on every Wednesday, that'd be terrific.
I'm glad that I've convinced you that I'm very busy, because that's a nice compliment for you to give me.
Well, you are busy, and you're very good at what you do, and we wanted to get a little bit more. And you're actually the perfect person to have on today. Full disclosure, Monday, we did the podcast. We recorded it with E.J. Raddick from NHL Now on the NHL Network, and we did about 10, 15 minutes on Don Cherry, and then he got fired after we recorded it, so we ended up editing it out because I didn't want to waste everybody's time spending so much of the podcast talking about something that would have been dated. So we haven't been back on the air since, and since you're up in Canada and you're right in the thick of everything, just tell us what the overall reaction, you know, has been. Here in the States, it's gotten a lot of traction, so I'm imagining up there it's probably one of the, you know, bigger stories we've seen so far this season.
Don, it's front page news about the release of Don Cherry from Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. And what I can say about the situation is this, is that throughout my career, I had the chance to meet Don on several occasions and then worked with him in the same organization with Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada in my time there. I wasn't in the studio on Saturday nights, which is his evening on Hockey Night in Canada. But whenever I brought friends in or family to meet him or get something signed for a charity event, he was always very gracious with his time, and he treated everyone that way. But on Saturday night, his comments and the language that he used stating "you people" is not acceptable. And as broadcasters, if you have any longevity in this career, you and I both know we've all made mistakes on air. But what's truly disappointing is that Don wouldn't apologize for it. The next day, instead, he doubled down and said, "I believe and stand by what I said, that all Canadians should wear a poppy in support of our veterans and military." But he didn't use the words "all Canadians." He used the words "you people." And that's why this becomes an issue and becomes an even bigger one, because he didn't apologize. And, you know, Don, I've lived in the United States and I lived in New England. And I feel in the United States that there is a lot of conversations about racial tension and cultural tension. But up here in Canada, we have it as well. We have racial and cultural tension, but we don't tend to talk about it. And what this moment has done with Don Cherry being the Canadian icon, not a hockey icon, a Canadian icon, is that it's opened up the door to this conversation here in Canada, and many people are backing Don Cherry and the use of his language, "you people." Now, we live in a democracy, and while I might disagree with that, other people have their right to think what they want. And many also believe that Don Cherry was doing his job and that Rogers Sportsnet had no right to fire him because he was creating controversy, and that's what he's been paid to do for 40 years. But the fact there is that his job is to create controversy when dealing with the game of hockey. And as soon as you bring in race or gender, which Don Cherry has done multiple times in his career, but we are in 2019. And this is just a situation where people were offended, people were hurt, and there are absolutely no winners. And I am extremely saddened by the fact that whenever you go to Google Don Cherry now, unfortunately, this is going to be his legacy. And it's just such a sad situation because, quite frankly, you can put Don Cherry right alongside Wayne Gretzky when it comes to builders of this game. And that's how much he has meant. And this has really opened a door to some uncomfortable conversations in Canada right now with what he said on Saturday night.
No, it's just incredible. And he was on Fox News here in the States and obviously got looked upon a little differently because that's always been kind of the right conservative way on Fox News. And they gave him the opportunity. And he said that his regret was he should have said "everybody" instead of "you people," mm-hmm. that he misspoke. I think what it comes down to, Leah, for us, because we're going through the same thing here in the States, is that you just can't always fall on, "well, I'm defending the veterans." Why, when you're defending something, does it have to come at the expense of something else? Like, why in defending the veterans did he end up having to disparage other people? Why can't you just do, why does one have to always seem to come along with the other? And that's always been Don's thing, right? Well, I'm ripping Forsberg, or I'm mispronouncing Jaromír Jágr's name because I'm supporting the Canadian hockey players that are losing their jobs because these Europeans are coming over here. So, and I understand that you want to support the Canadians. He's true blue, deep down inside Canadian. So I understood where he was coming from all those years when he refused to admit that Peter Forsberg was a great player, when he just refused to acknowledge the European players. But why did it have to come at a price? And it's the same thing here. And now we're not talking hockey. Now we're actually talking about life and everything that you can relate to. And it's kind of, you know, he was kind of out over his skis as far as I thought when he started to branch away from the hockey. So why in supporting the veterans did it had to come at the expense of immigrants or come at the expense of people that are not Canadian, and people that obviously were offended by that? So I think that's the price you pay. And also at 85 years old, he probably feels like, I never had to apologize before. This is the way that I am. And this is what happens. I think you have to evolve, Leah, right? I mean, what he got away with in 1987 or 1997 or 2007 is not what you're going to get away with in 2019. And his inability to acknowledge and apologize and just fall under that whole sword of I misspoke, I don't see any other alternative Sportsnet had but to let him go.
There really isn't any alternative, and you just hit the nail on the head there. This is the fact that Don Cherry is an 85-year-old man, and while we have evolved as a culture, perhaps his belief system has not. I even think about Don speaking to my own father, who's, you know, 66 years of age, and saying to him, Dad, you can't say those words anymore. And he doesn't mean it. He was brought up in a small town in Manitoba. He doesn't mean any ill will by it, but he's still learning. Mm-hmm. That this is not acceptable today. And I know from working for Sportsnet that their cultural, when you sign on there, you sign statements that suggest that you will watch yourself and your language, and it is grounds for dismissal. So they do, you know, as a corporation, really believe in that. But, you know, there's so many other pieces to this, and it's, I totally agree with you that why does it have to come at the cost of someone else when you're supporting a different group? And, you know, I've had issues with things that Cherry has said over the years. You know, he said that women shouldn't be in dressing rooms. And as a woman who does this for a career, I don't believe anyone should be in the dressing room, quite frankly.
Right.
I think that's the player's sanctuary, and we should have no business being in there. But that's my belief. But so he has said things through the time that he has gotten away with that he does not have the right to get away with in 2019 because we have evolved. And for some people, we've evolved too much and we're too sensitive. And sometimes I feel that way as well. But in this case, it was as simple as apologizing for your language. And I truly believe if he would have done that, we saw Ron McLean go out and do it. And I tell you right now, I think Ron would have done that on his own. But I guarantee there was pressure from the network to
do so. I'm sure there was.
You're talking about your two biggest faces in Canadian media. And you're also on Hockey Night in Canada, which is our nation's public broadcaster. And we are Canada, which is known as the country that allows immigrants to come and keep their cultural ways and not being a melting pot, but a mosaic of culture. And that's what we stand and wave that flag on. So he had to apologize. And the fact that he doubled down, that cost him his job. That's just the bottom line. I believe Coach's Corner would have been on this Saturday if Don Cherry would have came out the next day and did what Ron McLean did.
No, you're absolutely right. And just a final note on this, too, and this is what I kind of struggle with, because you look at social media, and as you said, he's a pariah now, and this is going to be what's remembered about him. And I guess the shame of it, and listen, he's the guilty party here, and he's the person that did this to himself, but it is kind of a shame that this will probably be his lasting legacy. He has done so much for people in Canada. He has donated so much money and involved charitably to hockey and to so many people, and his legacy is probably tarnished forever. I just wish that there were degrees. I think what he did was wrong. I think he deserved to be fired, but should he be lumped in with David Duke? Should he be lumped in with Donald Sterling? You know, there are degrees to everything, and maybe time, unfortunately, because his time at 85 years old is probably only a certain number, but I hope the years are a little bit more forgiving to this, and it's not, that's Don Cherry that ruined his career at the end, and not think about some of the good things that he did. I've met him, I've talked to him, I think deep down inside he is a good person that did a bad thing and deserved to be punished for it, but I just have the feeling this probably is going to universally define him, maybe for the length of time we ever think about him.
And it's truly unfortunate because, as I said at the start, I've never seen a man who's more generous with his time and more beloved. And there's a reason he's beloved. And, you know, people make mistakes. This was one of them. And as you said, he deserves to be punished. But only time will tell. And it truly is. There's just absolutely no winners in this situation.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. The only comparable I guess I can throw out there from an American standpoint is Howard Cosell, who was as polarizing and a huge name. And the last thing he ever did on television was describing a football player as a little monkey. And it got his, got himself fired at the end of his career. He didn't mean anything by it. He used to call his grandchildren monkeys. But obviously that was taken the wrong way back in the mid-80s, and he was let go. And I think when we think back to Howard Cosell, that's something we think of, but we also think of all the other things that went on too. So maybe time will make this just a part of his story, not the defining moment or the only thing that we think about. But let's dive into some good news with hockey. And I was calling the Ranger-Penguin game, so I wasn't completely engaged in what was happening in Boston between the Panthers and the Bruins, but I don't know how to look at that game, Leah. Do we look at that as, what's up with Boston blowing a 4-goal lead in the third period? Or, hey, let's wake up to this Florida team. This Florida team, well-coached, a lot of talent on that team. Then maybe this is more a positive for Florida than a negative for Boston.
Listen, they are very well coached. Joe Quenneville's one win away from his 900th win, only the second coach in NHL history to do that compared to Scotty Bowman. And this was a big reason they went out and got Coach Q. And they do have a tremendous amount of talent. So I would say that it's a little bit of both. I think people do need to wake up to Florida. This is a strong team that's had a lot of talent. Sergei Bobrovsky is not looking quite as sharp as they would likely hope him to as they find him as a UFA. But last night, I think really Boston, I would say it woke, Florida woke up as they started to go, but I think Boston lost that game themselves. I mean, Coach Cassie talked about it after the game, Don, about the marginal penalties. You know, when you look at the penalties they took, it was hooks and slashing and roughing, which says to me that this team wasn't skating enough last night. And I don't think it's that they can't keep up with Florida. I think that sometimes teams just get a little sloppy, and then they didn't defend those penalties well, and you see Florida pot two goals on it, and then the recharge begins, and away they go, and they've got some advantages to them. But, you know, I'm not too worried about Boston. I don't know how you feel, Don. This roster is so deep. They're well coached as well, and I think they're going to figure this out and get off this little slide that they're on, and I wouldn't really be worried about them compared to some other teams that have had hot starts that I'm not quite sure have the horses to pull them through.
Yeah, that's going to be just an interesting way of play. Boston's still very good, and I don't think anybody defines anything this early in the season. But Boston, you look at the Bruins, they lost to Philadelphia. They fought back. They got two goals in the third period, eventually lost that game in the shootout. They lost a couple of games before that, you know, settled down, but they're still very good. Florida's in a division, obviously the same as Boston, but, you know, they had to start getting going. I'm still not sure where they're going to end up at the end of the day. I mean, Buffalo, we got to talk about them too. Four straight losses. They went out to Sweden, didn't get any points against Tampa. Tampa, you know, is going to be better. Toronto's Toronto. They're probably going to be there right with the top three. Can you see Florida competing for the top three, or do you think that that's a team that's probably going to have to settle for the wild card and maybe still not 100% sure they're a playoff team?
I actually think that I could see Florida being a playoff team through their division and not in the wild card. I have a lot of faith in this Florida Panthers team. I think they have a lot of talent on it, and we saw some of their studs last night come to play, and they were their difference makers. And when you have your stars being your stars, that's a good sign. I truly believe that Florida could be a playoff team through their division, and I would definitely say they're going to be a playoff team no matter what.
So let's see. If you've got Boston, I still think Tampa's going to be one of the top three. I think they're just too good. Would you agree with that? It doesn't sound like you do.
Here's the thing. You look at Tampa on paper, right? Just like last year, and they were lights out last year, but then they go and get swept in the first round by the Islanders. There's something about this Tampa Bay team where I feel there is something missing. And I don't know if that's within the room. I don't know if the coach's voice has been pushed out. I've heard some rumblings about Cooper. As highly regarded as he is, there's a lot of people that I've spoke to that say that Tampa Bay is missing that piece. And there's a part of me that, you know, when I look at, you were just naming off some teams in the Atlantic, you know, I think the Bruins are going to be there. I think the Panthers are going to be there. The Toronto Maple Leafs, they definitely have the ability to be there. Now, the Sabres are the one that I'm very on the line about in spite of their hot start. I don't think they have the horses, and we can talk a bit more about that. But I would assume on paper Tampa should get in there. But I would be more inclined to say that Tampa may enter via the wild card than the others.
I get what you mean about Cooper. He can be a bit much. Okay. I like him. He's a very good coach. But I can see where he has a shelf life, like Laviolette, like DeBoer. Like, you see good coaches, they've gone far, but, you know, that maybe he's somebody that just can't be in one place for too long. He's early in his career, obviously, but, you know, I mean, listen, Laviolette's a great coach. Went to a final with Philadelphia, won a cup with Carolina, went to a final with Nashville, but he's kind of bounced around because he has a shelf life. Maybe Cooper has that shelf life. But I think more than anything else, Leah, they got to be able to keep Hedman healthy. I think that's the difference. You know, he was not healthy in that series against Columbus. I think that's why they went out as quickly as they did. He's been in and out of the lineup so far this year. So if he's healthy, I still think they're a top three team in that division. I just think that they're just too good. But, you know, if Hedman doesn't stay healthy, if it's that much that one player can that make that big of a difference, then maybe there is something to what you're saying, that maybe there's more to it. But I need to see Hedman healthy. If Hedman's healthy now coming back from this injury and they rattle off, you know, 10 out of 11 or something like that, then I think they're okay. But deep down, is it a coaching issue? Is it, I don't know what else it could be other than that. I mean, look at the talent on the team, right? I mean, they're so deep on the blue line. So many different guys could score. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see what happens with Hedman.
It's amazing, though, to your point about how one player, and especially a defenseman, is so pivotal for this team and their success. I mean, that really speaks to how outstanding of a player he is. And I honestly believe that even though, you know, he's won the trophies, I don't believe he gets enough credit for what he does. But when you look at the Lightning up front, you know, they are packed with guys who can put the puck in the net. And when I talk about Coach Cooper, it's more so that I don't know if it's about him as a coach or if it's about how much talent he is coaching. And sometimes when you have such a talented team, almost too much talent, that can be a hard thing for a coach to get within and coach and do his job. And I'm wondering if there's almost some, you know, discombobulation within the lineup because they have so much talent. And I know that sounds ridiculous.
No, it doesn't, because you know who you just...
that win cups, if you look at St. Louis, Washington, they have talent, but they also have a lot of guys within that are not elite superstars. And I think that does make a difference.
But you know who you described as far as a guy that maybe can't coach too much talent is John Tortorella. I think Tortorella's a better coach when he has less talent than when he has more. I think he gets more out of the muckers and grinders and doesn't necessarily know what to do sometimes with the highly skilled guys. Because listen, I remember when he was coaching the Rangers, you don't want Gabrick to block shots, but that's kind of the way Tortorella coaches, where he's better with the common player and kind of doesn't know what to do with the skilled player. Could it be where just Cooper just has just too much of that, where sometimes you don't coach these guys, right? You just let them go out and play. They're just too skilled to maybe be in that kind of structure.
And it's a great point, because if you look at where Coach Cooper came up through, I mean, through his AHL days and whatnot, you know, it's hard. It would be a very hard progression to come into a team and go, okay, I've got to kind of take my hands off the wheel and let these guys go. And so I'd like to see if there's micromanaging being going on and if that has been causing any kind of friction. But I do just have this gut feeling that there is something missing in Tampa and there's a disconnect, whether it's the players and the coaches or within the players themselves, but it's just not quite working.
Now, if you're not going to give me Tampa as the top three, you will give me Boston. Toronto's in the conversation. Florida's in the conversation. Where would you put Montreal?
In there.
What would you put Montreal?
See, and this is interesting because Montreal is right now, they, I think, are overachieving in my expectations for them this season. But again, it's these teams that kind of come together when they don't have all the talent in the world, but they do have some talent that I believe sometimes can get in there. And one of the things for me with Montreal is I never count them out because they have Carey Price. And at the end of the day, the old adage, if you have a goalie, you have a chance. And with Price in the net, you always have a chance. And they've got some players that are just really rocking it right now. But I feel if Montreal is going to get in, Don, it's going to be through a wild card. I don't think that they will stay within the division standings and get through in the division.
Yeah, so that's, you know, we talk about, like, the Central being the best division. I think the Atlantic is really starting to come into shape here. If Buffalo's for real, we don't know, they've lost four in a row. They won 10 in a row last year and didn't make the playoffs. But with Florida, I still think Tampa's a good team. Toronto's a good team. Boston's a good team. That, you know, it's going to be fun to watch how this Eastern Conference ends up playing itself out. Right now, it's really difficult to sink your teeth into, because, like, from the Ranger perspective, I'm doing the game last night, and, you know, I always kind of mention, all right, the records of the teams, and the Rangers were 7-6-2. They had 16 points and were in sixth place in the Metropolitan Division. But that's so unfair, because they played 15 games going into last night. Only Tampa's played 15. Everybody else has played more. So are the Rangers really in sixth place, or are they a team that just has to catch up with everybody else because they played so few games? And that's kind of the way it is, like, everywhere, to really kind of determine where you are. You know, the Islanders have only played 16 games, so they're 5 points back of Washington, but they could be very easily in first place because they got 3 games in hand on the Capitals. So it's really difficult to find out where everybody is because of the international play, and the Rangers for some reason have a stupid week off between games two and three of their season, that right now there's no equality in the number of games played.
And the other part of that, too, when you mention the schedule, is when you look at a team like Buffalo, and yes, they got off to that very hot start. You know, they were sitting there. They were 1 point up on Washington at one point. They were third in the league in goals, and now they've only got 1 win in their last 7. But they did participate in the Global Series over in Stockholm. And what that does, and I saw this last year with Winnipeg participating in it and then Colorado the season before, is that you really need to pay attention to this front end of your schedule, because when you get to March and the last 2 weeks of the season, your schedule condenses when you play a part of those global series. You have 1 day off between games. It's jam-packed. It's great if you can go out and win all those games, but you really need to position yourself due to the schedule when you play in a global series like Buffalo did to do well now up until the Christmas break. So the fact that Buffalo has come off, and yes, they had some injuries, and it just came out today that Vladimir Sobotka, he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks with that lower body injury that he suffered against Tampa. So that's not good news for them. But I mean, they really need to get going now, in my opinion, because if you're going to wait till the end of the season with how hard of a structure that will be with so many games and so many days, then you're in trouble to get into that playoff push.
Let's talk a little bit Winnipeg. You're up there. I was not surprised the Jets lost the game, but considering the goaltending situation for Colorado, they got shut out. Now, we've talked about it before. Winnipeg's got their issues on the blue line, but, I mean, how do you not score a goal last night?
You don't score a goal last night because Adam Werner is apparently the new gift to God when it comes to goaltenders, and comes in and makes 40 saves in his NHL debut. No, in all honesty, I mean, yes, the Avs have Philip Grubauer. He's hurt right now. And then, you know, Pavel Francouz, who I don't know that much about, quite frankly, he gets injured 31 seconds in, and this kid Werner comes in and shuts the door. But the big thing for me, Don, in watching that game last night is Nathan MacKinnon. Put this guy in the Hart Trophy conversation right now, and he deserves to be there. He probably deserved much more last year as well. But right now, he's playing without his line mates in Mikko Rantanen and Gabriel Landeskog, but that doesn't seem to matter. Right now, 5-on-5, when he's on the ice, his line is outscoring their opponents 8-5. He's got 11 points in the last 7 games. He picked up 4 points last night, including 2 goals. But, Don, it's his speed. There was no one on the ice on Winnipeg that could keep up with him last night. He had a play where he was in the neutral zone, chipped the puck in, chased his own chip in, just blew past everyone, including his own teammates, went in and got it, brought it back out, set up a goal, because his teammates were trailing in. I don't know if I've seen this type of speed. The lower body strength on MacKinnon is unbelievable. You add that onto his point production. He's sixth in the NHL right now. You add that onto the fact that he's playing with Jonas Donskoy and Matt Calvert, love them as players, but they're not top line players on an NHL team. But look what he's doing. So I truly believe, you know, you've seen Colorado, they had super high expectations coming into this season. They've, you know, struggled a bit out of the gate. They've won three now, but they're a good looking hockey team. And he is the one that is driving the bus, no matter when Landeskog or Ratanen come back.
Ready for some tweets?
Sure.
All right. Aaron says, we've discussed this before, but wanted Leah's input. Tie game and a few minutes left, we'll see teams get very conservative to guarantee a point and then play for the win in overtime. Should NHL consider dropping over OTL points and award a regular season win more than an overtime win?
Absolutely. I hate the fact that you get a point. I don't think if you win the game, you get your points. If you don't, you don't get them, because I absolutely agree with that. You see it so often in the last couple minutes when it's a tie game that teams will both kind of start to take their foot off the gas and they'll just kind of play it a little bit safer, reserved, as, you know, as recognized by the tweet. But I truly believe that the three-point structure also confuses the situation when it comes to parity in the league, because you're seeing teams get into the playoffs that are getting in. I know there's ROW, but the fact is that they're getting in because of that extra point that teams get. And I don't always think that we're seeing the best teams within the playoffs because of the three-point structure.
Yeah, you're right, because it was kind of foolish when you think about it. The NHL used to say the reason that they kind of went to the four-on-four overtime to begin with and also award a point to the loser in overtime, because they felt that the overtime was being wasteful, that you play the 5 minutes and the teams would kind of just play icecapades for 5 minutes because they wanted to get the point in the tie. Well, now you get that at the end of the regulation. When, now, I don't know if it's 5 minutes, but at least late in the game, why would you take a chance? You know, I got a point in my back pocket. I'm not going to mess with it. You know, unless you get late in the year where you're taking on a divisional opponent, you desperately need the two and have them get none. But early in the year, I'm not gonna make a mistake and walk away with no points when I've got a point in my back pocket. But here's the issue though. If you start playing 3-on-3, which is certainly as entertaining as it is, it still compromises the sport. That's not the way the game is supposed to be played, 3-on-3 for the length of 5 minutes. Is it fair to lose 3-on-3 and get no points? So now we get into, do I have to reward 3 points for a regulation win and 2 points for an overtime win? Do you want to start getting into that territory?
Well, and that's what I was just about to say, is that there has been the conversations before amongst the owners and the general manager meetings within the National Hockey League that do we give a win 3 points and keep it 1 point for the overtime or the shootout loss? Because then there's a bigger discrepancy in between. But I just think it's really simple. If you win the game, you get the points. If you don't, you lose.
Yeah.
You can win it in regulation? Okay. So win it now. You can't win it now? You didn't win it. You didn't win the game. This is not handing out medals or honorable mentions for showing up. We are in professional sports. Why in hockey, if you go to overtime, do you still get a point compared to other sports?
See, I can live with
that. The winner is the winner.
Even with the 3-on-3, I can live with that. What I cannot live with is me getting nothing, losing a shootout. If I get through overtime, I think I deserve a point. I would not want to see a team play 65 minutes, lose a shootout, which is a glorified skills competition, and I get no points. So would you be comfortable with through 65 minutes, then both teams get the point, let them play out the shootout for the extra point?
I would be comfortable with that, because I absolutely agree with you that there's nothing I hate more in the game of hockey than a shootout.
Right.
It all comes down to the fact that I don't think there's a greater sport where you need to have, it's not like the NBA where one guy can go off and you can win a game. Hockey is the epitome of needing the entire group to play a certain way, or else you don't win, or else you lose. And so I hate the shootout more than anything. And I would, I'd be okay with that, but I would rather just have the shootout go away altogether. But I know that's not happening either.
Yeah, I wish it would. You know, you should be the commissioner. We should be like dual commissioners.
Yes.
Things would be so much better. You know, we'd have Canada represented. We'd have America represented. Man, woman. It would just all work out. Maybe that's the new thing in the world. Don't have one person be in charge. Maybe have at least two.
I agree with that. And I agree, actually. You know, maybe let's try having a woman in charge. And yeah, I think the world would just work better. So there you go.
That's right. Irene says the Sharks have won 4 in a row, but are still not playing to their potential. Do you think they've turned it around?
You know, isn't this interesting? Because San Jose, they've been so strong for so long and so consistent, and they come out of the gate, they're not doing so well, and then they win. Now they've won four, but the other day I heard on talk radio after they've won three, oh, the Sharks have figured it out, they've turned the corner. It's a very small sample of wins. So I can't come out and say that they figured it out. What I can say is that that team has way too much talent not to figure it out at some point. So I'm not ready to go and say, oh, yeah, San Jose's on the rise and here they come. But I would have definite faith that with the group that they have the ability to do so.
Yeah, I just don't believe in Martin Jones. And I know he went to a Stanley Cup final, but I think their Achilles heel to me has been their goaltending. It's happened for a long time here. And that's what happens with goaltending, right? Sometimes it's okay for a little while and you start to win. And then when you really start to try to turn the corner, it ends up rearing its ugly head again. It happened all time and time again last year to them. So we'll see if it... if it works itself out. I'm just not 100% sure about that. Chris says, hi, Don and Leah. Should I have a glass half full view of the Flyers' three straight wins against top Atlantic Division teams, a glass half empty view as they blew a 2-0 lead in those games, or something in between?
I think with the Flyers, it always has to be something in between, because there is one thing that I know, and I think that most Flyers fans know, is that this is a team that has been full of inconsistency throughout the years. They have their hot streaks, and then they go cold, and then they come back and they're hot. And it's not just because of their goaltending, even though their goaltending has been an issue for many, many years. So I would say it's just right in the middle, because the thing about the Flyers is that I think they are playing a different way and a different structure under head coach Alain Vigneault. I think they're being more aggressive. They're not waiting for the game to come to them as much as perhaps they were. And I think they've got out there and, you know, and they're trying to dictate the pace more than they have in the past. They do have talent. They have especially great talent on the D, and I think Ivan Provorov's game is coming around as well, which is really nice to see because he is such a talent for them on the blue line. So I think it can be half full, but I'm not sold on Philly yet.
Yeah, we're going to have to wait and see. We've been fooled by them before, but they've kind of been the same team for a while. Their goaltending was awful at times this year, but now I still think Hart's the guy, but he's still very, very young. At a position, it's a young sport, Leah, but for some reason, not in goaltending, right?
Not in goaltending.
You can have guys in their 30s, so you need that experience.
And, you know, and to me, and again, like, I'm not trying to show my bias here, but, you know, that was one of the crux of Ron getting fired, was that he didn't feel that it was time to bring up Carter Hart. He didn't want to do that. He didn't want him to come up and get shell-shocked, because it's very important, especially in the goaltending position, confidence is everything. And there is such a jump. I don't know if we realize the jump from the American League to the NHL. I mean, the American League is, you know, a very talented league. It's the second best within the world, but it's not the NHL. And, you know, for goaltenders, it really takes, I say, almost until their mid-20s and that kind of seasoning and that baking, you know, in the American League, and then bringing them up, and bringing them up sometimes in a slow progression where they come up for a few games and then they go back down and continue to play. And then they come up for a few games until they finally become a full-time goaltender. But it's a really difficult position. And, you know, I think Carter Hart has all the tools. I absolutely believe in this young man. He's had success wherever he's gone. But this is, you know, and it's not like he has a perfect team in front of him either.
No, he doesn't. But they are very well coached. At least I have a lot of respect for Alain Vigneault, Michel Therrien. I mean, they're pretty deep there. But, yeah, this... They're kind of in between for me. I wouldn't be surprised if they snuck in to the playoffs. I wouldn't be surprised if they missed the playoffs altogether. We just got to wait for Hart to grow. And we had that conversation when they called up Carter and was going on with Ron, because he didn't want to do it. And I agreed with him. But it was hard because how many goaltenders? Like 9 different goaltenders they used that year too. So kind of got put in that position. But you're right. It's a lot to throw at a kid. And some handle it. I know Marty handled it. Marty Brodeur handled it very young in his career. But for the most part, these guys take a little while to mature in a sport where 18, 19 year olds are thriving. That's usually not how it goes for goaltenders. Usually it's not until their mid 20s before they hit their form. And on a team where he's probably expected to be their best player night in and night out, I understood where your cousin was coming from, because you don't want to damage the kid's confidence, because everybody else can skate off the ice after a loss and find some good in things. The goalie, like the pitcher in baseball, he's the one that gets tagged with that defeat. And so sometimes that's hard to overcome. I took up way too much of your time today. I just had too much fun talking to you. But
no,
that's why we got to do this as a weekly.
There you go. We'll do it on Wednesdays. It'll be that midweek, something for everyone to look forward to.
All right. So I'm going to finish up with some more tweets. I'm going to let you go. But thank you so much, and we will talk again next Wednesday.
All right, Don. Have a good one.
All right. That's Leah Hextall. Does a great job up in Canada, covering everything that's going on in the Great White North, and she is going to be our Wednesday feature. If you want to follow her on Twitter, it's at Leah Hextall. That's LEAHHEXTALL. So you can reach out to her. Of course, you can follow me at Don LaGreca as well. Wanted to get to a couple of more tweets and preview the games tonight. Andrew says, hey, Don, great job across the board with the pod and the K-Show. Ranger question, do you think Adam Fox should be in the running for the Calder? He's right there with Hughes and Kako point-wise. He was so impressive last night. I pumped the brakes on it. It's still very, very early. You got Makar over there in Colorado, and, of course, you just mentioned Hughes and Kako. But right now, they've got to be thrilled with not only his production on the blue line, but what D'Angelo's done on the blue line. Lindgren's contributed offensively. Hayak's been good getting a chance to play with Trouba. There's a lot of good things happening with the New York Rangers. Brett says, Kako is starting to find a rhythm, and it's looking great. I see Zibby may have a concussion because he's been a long time since he's playing, and the Rangers aren't saying much. But when it comes back, his offense keeps it up. They can be great. Need to work, though. You're talking about Zibanejad. He is not going to make the trip to Florida, so he has missed what now? They're 5-1-1 without him, so he's missed 7 games, so he's going to miss Tampa and Florida, so that's going to be 9. And then they don't play again till the following Wednesday. So the hope is that maybe he'll be, from a week from today, back in the lineup when the Rangers play host to the Capitals on NBC Sportsnet. You're probably right. I mean, that's we haven't heard anything, but he's been out a while. It was a headshot, upper body injury is what they're calling it. So you got to be worried about that. But, hey, like I said, 5-1-1 without one of their best offensive players, and they're going to be pretty deep when he comes back. And that's why you wonder about Elias Anderson, because the way Hedl is playing, the way Howden is playing right now, when Zibanejad comes back, you know, you just wonder if Elias Anderson is going to be the odd man out. Now, NYR Fanatic says, Don, I disagree with your take on Elias. I'm not ready to give up on him. In my opinion, if he is not getting limited minutes on the fourth line and playing with the McKeggs, Haleys, and Smiths of the world, he wouldn't be having this conversation about him. But, and again, I'm not trying to throw him away at all. I think Elias Anderson is still a good player in the future, but I mean, it's a numbers game, right? I mean, right now he's the fourth defenseman with their best defenseman out. So where exactly does he lie? I think he's an NHL player, and Dave and I had the conversation during the broadcast last night that he needs to stay in the NHL, but where he's going to play when he comes back, and that's the question. Sam says, I know it's early, but do you see the Rangers moving either Kreider or Staal or both by trading deadline? And what should you do with Elias Anderson? Keep him on the fourth line, send him to Hartford, or shop him as well? Well, again, I'm not shopping him. Hartford may end up being the destination for him. Kreider and Staal, hey, it all depends on where the Rangers are at the trading deadline. I don't think they have any appetite to do anything now, and we'll see where it goes from there. Troy says, did you stay up and watch the Russian 5 special on NBC Sportsnet last night? If not, any thoughts on Detroit and their groundbreaking move to play 5 Russian players together in the NHL? I did not see it, but I did read the book over the summer, and I thought it was phenomenal. I thought it was groundbreaking. You're absolutely right. To have 5 players on the ice at the same time. You know, Larionov in the Hall of Fame, Fetisov in the Hall of Fame, Fedorov in the Hall of Fame. I mean, they get so many great players. Kozlov, not a Hall of Famer, but still a very, very good player for the Detroit Red Wings, too. So you're right. And, of course, you know, Konstantinov and what happened to him with the limo. Just a phenomenal, phenomenal story. Thanks for reminding everybody about that. And I do need to see that movie for sure. Ozzy says, so do you think it's finally time to lift the stigma of Leonard? He's clearly a good goaltender and not a product of the system. He's second in save percentage, ironically, only behind Grice. And as a Chicago fan, I assure you, it's behind a horrid D. You're absolutely right. I've always liked him. You know, but it wasn't like he wasn't given the opportunity in Buffalo. You know, so let's not pin all of his reputation on the Islanders for last year. I think he's always been a borderline starter, more of a backup goaltender. But I think he got a chance to play last year, got a chance to play for a winner for the first time in a long time. I think he might be growing into that. I'm not sure there was ever a stigma around him necessarily, but I do think he is breaking a lot of ground here by the way he's playing. And you're right, he's not playing in anywhere near the defensive system that he did with the Islanders last year. All right, we had a lot of good games last night. tried to get into as much as we could with Leah. We do have a few games tonight to talk about. Senators and the Devils. Devils come back from a 2-2 Western Canadian swing. Senators, a pesky team to play for. So on the Devils, I'd be a little careful. Sometimes that first game back from the road trip can be a little scary. So Devils got to get going here, and they've actually got less wins than the Senators do. So we'll see what happens there. Islanders and the Maple Leafs, of course, John Tavares returning back to New York. So I'm sure he's going to hear a lot of blues, Capitals and Flyers. We just talked about Philadelphia. Big test for them at home against the Caps. Stars and the Flames, a good one. Golden Knights home for the Chicago Blackhawks, as the Golden Knights probably not playing to the level people thought. I would say definitely not at 9-7-3. So they've actually lost more games than they've won so far this year for a team that many thought was going to be coming out of the West. I mean, you know, people get on me for picking Dallas to come out of the West. The people that weren't picking Dallas, they were picking Vegas, and Vegas hasn't exactly gotten off gangbusters either. So we'll keep an eye on those games. Let's be back with you on Friday. I think that's kind of what we're going to be doing here, because there's a lot of moving parts for me and my schedule, and I want to do the best podcast as possible, get as many guests as possible. So unless some things change, I think we're going to probably keep it on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday type of thing. So come back Friday. Of course, unless there's breaking news and something happens, you're always welcome to climb aboard and kind of change that. But Friday, of course, we'll have our top five for the week and kind of preview the weekend and all that. I'll be in Sunrise, Florida on Saturday for the Rangers and the Panthers. So if you want to get in touch with me, the best way to do that is at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. So we'll be back with you again on Friday. Thanks for everybody contributing today. And again, thanks to Leah Hextall. Always fun to talk to her. She's going to be our Wednesday standby for sure every single Wednesday here on the show. So back with you again on Friday. This was the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct podcast wherever you get your podcasts.